morning to you.
Good morning, Martin. It's lovely to be here with you because I'm so used to having you in the kitchen at home of a normal morning, do you know?
Yeah.
And seeing you, and you're exactly the same in the flesh.
Well, we never changed.
No.
A lot of us over the years, do you know what I mean? Charlie, Forever Rock and Roll Kid is a gorgeous book. It's gorgeous. I didn't know that you were a Holles Street baby.
Yeah.
And so am I. Oh yeah, Holles Street baby.
I don't want to embarrass or be asking your age. We could have been in neighbouring cots.
We could have been in neighbouring cots because people will be surprised at one level to hear of your Dublin background because they don't necessarily think of you as somebody who is a Dublin.
Yeah, Donegal, Leitrim, and Dublin.
Yeah.
But what happened was when I sat down when the COVID thing came and the lockdown came and there was no music, no gigs, nothing, yeah. And I was looking at an empty computer screen. I said maybe I could try this.
Yes.
You know, lots of people have done it, and maybe, so I have a go. And I just said, what's the first thing I remember? What's the first bit of music I remember? And I thought it was, how much is that doggy in the window?
Yes. That's right.
I thought it was that one. And then I said, no, there was something before that. And of course, it was a tune called O'Donnell Aboo. You remember that?
From RTE, from the radio. Was that 8 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, 3 minutes to 8.
Sorry.
They played it for 3 minutes before.
Yes, yeah.
And I could hear it. This was part of my waking up. As 2.5 years of age, imagine, I would have been at that time.
Gosh.
And I said, where was I when I was hearing that? And I was in my Granny Buckley's house in Effra Road in Rathmines, Dublin.
Right.
And suddenly the whole picture of Effra Road started to open up for me. Who lived next door? We had a lovely Jewish family lived next door.
Yeah.
And they used to... All the doors were open in those days. You could walk in and out of people's houses. There was no restrictions.
Yeah.
And Becky and Jaime and Louis were the people, a sister and two brothers. And they used to go to the synagogue on a Saturday night, and I used to cause blue murder because I could. They brought me everywhere, but they couldn't bring me to the synagogue. I didn't even know what the synagogue was.
Yes, right, yeah.
But, you know, I visited Effra Road not long ago, maybe about a year ago, and I took pictures. And my image as a child was this huge expanse of a street, you know, really wide, really long. It went from Rathmines to, you could go from Rathmines to Harold's Cross. And this is diminished in size. And believe it or not, Gretty and myself, my wife, just after we got married, we were looking for somewhere to stay. And we found a bedsitter, and of all places, 22 Effra Road, where my mother lived.
That's unbelievable.
And again, I had this experience of walking into what I thought was a Dallas-sized hallway, but it was diminished just into a small little place.
But what is it when we think of these places as bigger when we get older? When we look back, we imagine, but then we were smaller.
We were tiny.
So therefore...
We were tiny.
Yeah.
But you know what I love, Mark? The sounds of Dublin.
Yeah.
A simple thing like the sound of the bus conductor's machine that threw out the tickets for you know,
that's right,
you know,
I remember. Vroom, that's right.
The tickets came
that's
out.
Right.
And then the sound of the horse-drawn milk float.
But it's funny you'd remember all that because you left very young.
I left at 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I can remember, as I say, if you. Hopefully you will, or maybe you have, wrote a memoir or a book of some sort about your life. Yeah. It's when
I'll
you
send your copy.
It literally goes, a whole plethora of characters, places, people, and that was the joy of it. I just really enjoyed it.
And I noticed that going through the book, that you had so many interconnections with people. The family shop, for example.
Yeah.
Like if you, we didn't have that in our house, but if you had a family shop, obviously the world kind of came to you.
Without a doubt. We had the old style grocery, a little bit like Arkwright.
Open
All
Hours.
Ronnie
Barker, yes.
We even had a cash register that would take the fingers off you if it didn't.
Brilliant.
And there was two counters, one on each, a left hand side was for tobacco and those kind of farm stuff like Clorendo.
Now we should explain where the shop was.
The shop was in Ballyshannon.
My dad
really went back there before we moved down.
Yeah.
And it was called McGettigan and McGowan's at that time. Real old-fashioned old place. I used to love the shop. I worked in the shop doing all kinds of jobs, you know, after school. And I remember my dad... This was... You know, we often talk about times before the sliced pan. We used to bring... The lovely system in the schools in those days, for people who couldn't afford a lunch, they would get bread and jam and cocoa at lunchtime. And my dad was one of the suppliers. And the first thing in the morning, about 7:30 in the morning, he would slice pans, slice them with a knife, and make butter them all with thing, wrap them up in a big sheet of paper, and I'd have to carry them to school. And occasionally, I was acting a maggot or something, and the parcel broke open. There was jam and bread all over the place. And my father would give out yards. It was just people talk about the 50s. Being a very grey time, black and white. And I think the reason for that is all the photographs we have were black and white.
The television was black and white.
Yeah, and but somebody had must have been an American over on a cine camera, a very novel thing. Do you remember those?
I do.
Cine camera.
Yeah.
And he did a video, which would have been at the time, of the harvest fair in Ballyshannon, which was the biggest day of the year, when all kinds of farming stuff went on, but also stalls came with people like the Bargain King, who had all kinds of slogans.
Oh, would that be black and white or colour now?
No, this was in colour.
Okay.
And I discovered, he went past our shop, and there was our shop, beautiful wine with gold lettering over the top, McGettigan and McGowan. Yeah. And there was three, you know the way he obviously called three women in order to turn around and get into it, and they turned around, and it was my wife's mother and her two aunts.
I forgot.
As they looked in 1956.
Isn't that something?
Just a beautiful thing.
What a great memory. To have. I want to play a song. Radio On is a great song.
Yeah, well, you're the person that I'm listening to on the radio at home. So, yeah. I mean, let's face it, Marty, our generation, the first thing that went on every day was the wireless.
That's right.
Because
that was your access to the world and the news and whatever else, along with music.
Yeah, it was part of your soundscape of the day.
Yeah.
But I remember we had a big brown wireless, and there was things like the Kennedys' Castle Ross, and there was Mrs. Dale's Diary of
the
BBC. And they told me that all these people were inside the radio. This is a world, and all these people were walking around inside the radio. And I had this since about seven, I believed it.
I know. But you were disavowed of that as time went on. Uh-huh. This is Radio 1 for Charlie McGetty.
Day with my radio on. I love to sing along with the songs they play. It makes the whole day seem like fun. I spend the day with my radio on. When I'm driving in my car, it never seems so far with the things they say. I can't believe how many miles I've gone. I spend the day with my radio.
I'm chatting with Charlie Begetti here about his book Forever Rock and Roll Kid, which I've really enjoyed. Your move and going to De La Salle and all of that and forging relationships and playing in bands, you got into the music very early, didn't you?
I was about 13.
Yeah.
My first sort of realisation that there was music out there, I think, was my dad used to tune in to Radio Luxembourg every Sunday night because there was a guy called Horace Batchelor who had an infra-draw method that guaranteed you were going to win the pools.
Oh, right.
And he used to listen in. It was called the infra-draw method. And he used to always say, Horace Batchelor, Keymsham, spelled K-E-Y-M-S-H-A-M, Bristol. I always remember that. But because he turned on Luxembourg, there was all this music that we never heard on Radio Erne or on the BBC.
Yeah.
I remember the first thing I heard was Venus in Blue Jeans by
Bobby V? Venus in Blue
Mark
Jeans?
Winter, I think.
Had
the English version.
Even Fornabach.
Yeah. So then I heard a fella called Duane Eddy with this big
the guitar
sound.
Yeah.
I said, what's that?
Right.
And I looked it up, it was a guitar. And suddenly, in a shop in the window, in the Democrat, the Donegal Democrat newspaper office,
so
there was a guitar in the window. And I used to go home every evening after school and look at this guitar. And then one day it was gone. And where had it gone? And I found out that there was a fellow called Roy Doherty, lived in the top of a place called Clunbarn, and he had bought the guitar. And I called him and said, can I just see it? Can I touch it? And of course, I said, that doesn't sound like Duane Eddy to me. Yeah. I realised suddenly I had to learn how to play the guitar.
But a beautiful, it was probably one of those, like, those Gretsch ones, those big ones.
Yeah. And it was actually, there was a Hawaiian motif on the front of it. But I loved it.
But that's exotic, you know.
And then, of course, the Everly Brothers, you know, there was this chewing gum, bubble gum that you could get called LM bubble gum, and you got a free, with each packet for threepence, you got a free card, a playing card, like a deck of cards, and on the back of it were for American film stars, and the Everly Brothers were there with their black Gibson guitars.
Of course, they were so huge.
But see, there was a visual to it. Then, of course, Hank Marvin and the Shadows came along, and these Friend of Stratica, real rebellious-looking instruments, sharp.
You really liked the Shadows, didn't you?
Hank Marvin opened up so many doors for guitar players.
But that's very true. That's very true.
It was just a brilliant thing.
But when we think about that period and learning to play and being with mates and forming bands, you were in a band called, where's it? Oh, yeah, the Soundstorms. Soundstorms, if you don't mind. But one of the things that I really like about the way you did the book is the way you put lyrics into the book. That somebody can say, well, Charlie has if you're writing about whatever you're writing, just for the sake of argument, I just happened to open it here on page 104. It's about New Horizons, your mum and dad and the wedding day, right? Yeah. And lovely pictures. But when we go into the chapter and we read about the chapter, we then find that track you wrote about Paul Brady, the first time I saw Brady.
Funnily enough, I got a call from Paul Brady. He had never heard the song. I was so embarrassed. I wouldn't go up to Paul here. I have a song written about you, you know.
Sure.
But there was. And I'd written it about 30 years ago because I first heard Paul Brady in 1965.
You were blown away by him.
He came on stage. We were
in Donegal or somewhere?
Yeah, in Ballyshannon.
He was
in Bundoran when I heard him.
Go.
And he used to play in the Hollywood in Bundoran with Brian McAniff, the Donegal football manager.
Yes.
And a fellow called Cormac McCready. And I'm reading Paul's book at the moment. It's a riveting read.
It sure is.
Oh, it's a fantastic
read. Sure is.
You know, it's scary how low things had got for him after the Johnstons.
And we
thought he was on the top of the world because he was in America playing with the Johnstons. But read the book to find out what
it surely
actually
was.
But where we got? How did we get into this?
No, I was just making the point that here's this song.
Yes.
In this chapter, reading about the New Horizons, and then what you cleverly do is you put the song in, and then we can listen to the song
because by
putting the QR code.
You've seen them on all kinds of products,
but I've never seen this done before.
Neither have I think we might be the first people to have done it.
It's very clever.
And you just scan your camera phone over it and there it comes out. If you put your headphones in, you've got full stereo and the whole kit and caboodle, all in a book.
It's incredible.
I'm delighted with it.
It's a really clever way
I heard a poet called Louis de Puer on Arena, I think it was, one evening coming back from Dublin, and he had a book of poems out, and he had done it with poetry. And he said, if you want to, because, you know, poetry sometimes can read quite dry on the page.
Surely.
When you hear the poet reciting it, it's a completely different experience.
And
that's prompted me, couldn't we do that with music as well?
Yeah.
And there's 26 songs in there, and there are 26 pieces of music.
It's really clever. It's really, because it means also you can read the chapter, music is playing away.
You don't have to.
No, but you're getting a sense of it. For me, that was.
A lot of people have actually. I haven't read the book at all,
we've listened to the book, which is nice idea as well. One of the songs that I have also always loved, and I wonder, In Your Old Room. It's a great song. It's a sad song now.
But it wasn't at the time.
And it's an interesting one because I remember playing it one day and you came into my mind because it's about, you can tell us what it's about because you're married to Goretti, but you've Tara, you've Kira and Shane, who's gone. God rest him. He died in an accident in New York.
Boston.
He was working on building construction, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was playing on the Leitrim senior football team in 1998.
He was a fine fella.
Big into football, but I have another song that's on the Family Matters album called I Get Excited.
Yes.
And I'll tell you what, that's when I would see Shane in a crowd or on a football pitch or, you know, even on the street, I get excited.
Yes.
Because he was such a handsome, big fella.
Yeah.
And fiercely popular with all his compatriots. But anyway, they got through to the first round of the championship in 1998. They were knocked out. And Martin Carney, who's a sports commentator on RTE, hearing loads of times on the Sunday game and things like that,
sure.
Martin rang me up and he said, would Shane be interested in playing for a team in Boston? I said, would a cat drink milk? You know, and he said, so things began to think, and Shane got asked to go over to a team in Boston. And I remember the last day I saw him, we were at a football match in Tuam, and he was heading off, and he went off. And sadly, what happened then, we all know that that scaffolding he was working on collapsed, and himself and Ronan Stewart, a young lad from Dundalk, were killed. But the other song that you're talking about, In Your Old Room, was written just after he went, started college.
Yes.
And the room was empty, and I just sort of looked at, you know, I'd often go, I still do. But I, at that time, I was just thinking, God, I missed an awful lot of stuff, because we were busy. We were running around playing music and keeping it there. And I just thought, you know, I'll write this song about him. And of course, I think you or somebody played it on the radio, and all his college friends were, oh, look at your dad, your dad's a real softy, you know, he wrote this song.
But it's a beautiful song.
Yeah, well, it's thankfully now, and thankfully I wrote it when he was still alive.
Can you play it now?
I very rarely do.
I was just going to say.
Yeah, it's very hard to sing either of those.
I'd say
songs.
It'd be hard to sing. I hope you don't mind me bringing it up.
Not
but
at
it's,
all, no.
It's because you write lovingly about him in the book, and I've played it over the years, but I played it recently, knowing that the book was coming, and I don't know, it hits home.
In every little thing that I find there, these
These are the only things that I've left to share, sitting down in your old room.
It's so beautifully written, but because you're a great observer. You're a great observer.
I think songwriting is great. I was lucky, Marty, in that I kept the day job.
Well, you were Mr. Arigna, weren't you?
Mr.
When you think about it. Well, you were.
Well, I mean, that's where it all began, where I began to get sort of taking the music seriously and making records and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, and Drumshambo, it's a kind of place where they don't let you get above yourself very quickly.
Yeah.
But I remember, I suppose we'd have to talk about Eurovision. We eventually got to win Eurovision, Paul Harrington and myself. And I remember coming down to the after we returned, there were bonfires and all kinds of people on the water. You know, it was like the Pope had arrived.
Of course.
Yeah, but there was this fella called James Maguire, who was an auctioneer. And he had a megaphone out of the car. Come out, and welcome the winner of the Eurovision.
Lovely.
But he used to forget to turn off the mic. And we talked to the driver. See that field over there? I got 20 grand for that field last year. and this was all going out straight to the but they brought you down. I remember a few weeks after I walked into our local pub, Conway's Corner House, and there was an old guy, a retired ESP fellow, who used to work with me in the power station. And I walked in and he said, Charlie McGettigan, sure, the only time we ever see you now was on the television. And I said, oh, yes, as a matter of fact, we're on the late next Friday. He said, I might watch it.
Bring you down. Every time. Because that was such a success. When we think, before we get, I'm obviously going to play that, but before we even get there, I suppose in terms of cracking it with songwriting, Feet of a Dancer would have to be the one, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, it's a long story. Feet of a Dancer was originally written as a reaction to the Anne Lovett case, which is about 36 or 37 years ago. She was a young girl that lived in Granard.
Yes.
And sadly, she was pregnant and she had covered it up. Nobody knew she was pregnant, her friends, her family.
Yes.
She was afraid to tell anybody. And she came to a very, very sad end. Both her baby and she died in a grotto in Granard. And I said to myself, you know, if my kids, my girls, or Shane indeed, or any of them have troubles or anything, there is absolutely nothing I won't accept and talk to them about.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Because when this prompted me, I said, God, how was she so afraid to tell her parents, tell anybody about this? So I said, I hope you find the feet of a dancer, and I hope you find someone who'll care. But, you know, if you don't, we're always here.
Yes.
Come back, and we'll sort it out. And that's where it's
a beautiful and yourself and Maura, of course, bonded with that.
The funny thing, we recorded that in Nashville. I was over doing a little tour with Maura. We were playing in Boston, New York, different places. And we arrived down into the studio in Nashville with Bela Fleck, one of my favourite banjo players.
Oh, fantastic.
Amazing player.
Sat where you are some years ago.
Really? He's a genius.
You watch him, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and he can do Mozart, he can do anything on the banjo.
Yeah, he played classical first.
So you can imagine how I was, I was a huge fan, and I'm sitting there and he's producing Feet of a Dancer. And this girl came in to sing backing vocals and she sang beautiful. The two of us, we sang oohs and ahs and all kinds of stuff. We used to call them not the harmonies, the agonies. But she came and she said to me, you know, I'm launching my album later on tonight. Do you want to come down to the launch? And yeah. So we went down to a place called The Cannery and this massive band of top session musicians were there and this girl with her guitar. And it was Nancy Griffith. Imagine I was singing with Nancy Griffith and didn't know it.
It's astonishing.
And she became a friend and we met several times later in different events. Yeah.
Another great talent.
Oh, sure. She was brilliant. And from a distance. You know, Ireland really broke Nancy Griffith.
Yeah.
You know, really, it was here. You know, and how many other artists? David Gray was another one.
That's right.
Because they got played in Ireland.
You've worked with many people. I'm thinking about Maura O'Connell, of course, and lovely Eleanor Shanley. And then the Brendan Graham. I love the idea of you coming back to the hero's welcome and people letting you know where you came from.
Oh, yeah.
When you got the song, when Brendan Graham had written Rock and Roll Kids and yourself and Paul got together, Did you know? Did you feel that this really had the chance to go all the way? Because it was so different, if you think about
it. That's the reason. I felt it was a great song.
Yeah.
It was a song that was right in our comfort zone.
Yes.
Piano, guitar, and two vocals. That's all it was. And I said to Brendan at the time, whatever you do, don't go with the orchestration and don't go with the bright lights and the videos and all the other stuff. Just let Paul sing it on his own.
Yeah.
But then he said, there's something missing. He said, you know, would you be interested in it? And I was moving house at the time. It was a bad time to be asked. So I said, Brendan, give me 24 hours and I'll talk to Gretty and I'll talk to the family and see what they think. Because, you know, I was very busy with the move.
Yeah.
And I did. Thankfully, we both agreed, yeah, should we give it a go?
Yeah.
But when it won the national song, the Eurosong, and got through, we didn't. We were just, winning for us was to get to represent Ireland. Because I was never going to represent Ireland at football or boxing, sure, or anything like that, you know. And this was our chance to represent Ireland and do it well. It didn't matter. The winning didn't matter. We didn't even consider winning.
Right.
You know, Brendan did, though. Brendan had great faith in the. He got an 8-1 bet on it.
He never told us that.
I know.
He's meticulous, isn't he?
Absolutely, you know. And he took. You know, it was a great week. We had great fun, but the great thing about it, I think, was that Paul and myself gelled immediately, even though we were complete opposites. Paul's a dub, you know.
You're a dub.
But he's a real dub. He grew up in dub.
Up in Killester.
And yes. I remember one of the parties we went to afterwards. And you know, I can't think of the name of the pub in Killester, but Paul was totally at home there. And I remember this dub come up to me. He says, Jesus, I have to say yes. I saw you there. I thought you were bleeding brutal.
Was it a beachcomber?
Yes, it was the beachcomber.
See, I'm Killester as well.
Oh, you're there.
That's where I'm from.
We did a lovely gig. One time in Artane, I think it was.
Really?
And Sean Dunphy was on.
I was there with
you. Were me? I was there as well.
That's right.
And I think
you had travelled for it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, but I think last week in the National Concert Hall, I got to sing Sean Dunphy's song,
If I Could Choose.
And I remember talking to Sean. He was a hero. Because 1967, I was 17.
We're a Baldoyle.
Baldoyle. Yeah, I'm not good on Dublin.
Baldoyle.
But he was such a nice man. And I remember there was a little point when he was on singing the Eurovision that he winked. And he told his wife, "You'll see me."
Ah, for God's
And he
sake.
Winked at his wife in the middle of all the Eurovision paraphernalia stuff going on.
Isn't that something?
But it was just funny. Niamh Cavanagh said it's her favourite song.
It's a gorgeous song.
It's a beautiful song, you know.
Yeah.
And to sing it that back then with the full orchestra, oh man, what a thrill. Yeah.
Well, that was the difference, wasn't it? It was Noel Keelan, and it was the orchestra.
Yeah, all of that.
It was a whole different world. Mm. I love talking to you.
Well, it's been a pleasure for me too,
really,
as always,
gorgeous.
Mark.
Oh, well, thank you. But forever a rock and roll kid, which you are, irrespective of a ring in the ESB, it is, because that's what you're, and that's what the book tells the story of, and it's the highs and the lows, because it's not always. You mentioned Paul Brady; it's not always fabulous.
No,
everything isn't always good.
There are episodes which will shock people in there.
Yes,
but there are episodes where people will laugh.
Yeah, well, I think that's the joy.
Hopefully, got the balance right.
Well, you did, Charlie. God bless you. I have to play Rock and Roll Kids. I think it's in the contract.
Always is.
Always. God bless you.